Aw, yeah, boys and girls, citizens of the world, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, convenient, and
sunshiny
way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to it while you're stuck in line at the grocery store, walking the dog no more than 50 meters away from the front of your house, or
hanging out in quarantine.
I'm joined in the cross-Atlantic studio by the man who taught Elon Musk everything he knows, Justin Murray.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on? How's it been going?
It's going pretty well. How about yourself?
Pretty well. I'm getting maybe a little bit stir-crazy. How about you?
I am, too. What exactly does stir-crazy mean?
It's like when you're cooped up, you're kind of like trapped in a small space for a long time. You just start to kind of get like anxious or something, like you need to go outside.
It's like cabin fever, right?
That's another way to say it. So we said stir crazy, cooped up, and cabin fever. All very good vocabulary for quarantine, even though that's not the topic of today's podcast.
Yeah, cabin fever could be a little bit of a trigger word, though, these days, right?
Yeah, what do you mean by a trigger word?
A trigger word, people might be very sensitive to it, because if you have a fever, then maybe you might have the coronavirus.
It's almost like a double entendre. It's a play on words. So it's been a long time, right? Since we've been in the Cross Atlantic studio, in the podcast studio.
It has been a couple of years, hasn't it?
What happened? Why have we been on this hiatus?
Well, there are many reasons for that, but I think the main reason is that we decided to focus more on our YouTube channel, Learn English TV Series, which you've been doing a great job of hosting. So maybe you want to just talk a little bit about what we've accomplished there, what's going on, and give our podcast listeners an update.
Yeah, so if you're not following us over there, or you're not really keeping track of the numbers or anything, it's pretty amazing. We are just about to hit 2 million subscribers. It's still pretty unbelievable for me. I still think I'm going to wake up one of these days and see, you know, that we're still back in the day of having 100,000. But it's been a really incredible journey, and it's gone by really fast. We just hit 1 million back in September. So it just seems to be getting more and more momentum, and a lot of people are really aligning with kind of this vision for making English learning kind of fun, natural, very much so, I think, like people who listen to this podcast so loyally back in the day.
And so for those of you who have really followed us for a long time, you guys know Real Life English is about a lot more than just learning in English with TV series, but that's something that we decided to focus on, and the world has really embraced that idea. But now we've decided to come back to some of the background of Real Life English, some of the principles, and helping you guys go beyond the classroom to live your English.
Oh, yeah. So basically, we're going to have some more announcements coming up for you at the end of this podcast. We definitely want to celebrate this huge accomplishment with you all. And we're really excited to be reviving the Real Life English podcast, to be getting back, as Justin said, to kind of like the core of Real Life English, and just kind of vibing over some really great ideas.
So today's podcast is actually going to be along the lines of what Real Life English really is about. So today we're going to talk about classroom English versus real world English, which is kind of what Real Life English is in some sense. But before we do that, we're going to jump into today's shout outs.
All right, Justin, so who are we shouting out today?
Well, it's been a few years, so we have a lot of shout-outs, but we're going to start to talk about a couple of the five-star reviews that we got, and the first one is Rodrigo Fisher from Brazil. So Rodrigo said, "I'd like to thank you guys for this amazing podcast. It's definitely the best and the funniest way to learn English. Thank you so much." Oh, yeah, Rodrigo, thank you so much for that nice review. We really appreciate those five-star reviews. It really helps us grow.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rodrigo. And who's the other one?
We have the second review from Adria Rodriguez from Brazil also, who says, "Not only one of the best podcasts, but one of the best English courses of all time." Wow. What's he referring to with the course, Ethan?
I imagine that Adria is probably referencing the Real Life Native Immersion course, which is a really fantastic way, if you're enjoying these podcasts, to take your learning to the next level, because you get power learning guides, which help to explain all of the vocabulary. It helps you to understand every joke that we make. And as well, you get some vocabulary memorization software so that you don't forget anything that you learn. So it's really great to see, Ajir, that you're getting a lot of benefit from the podcast and also from the course.
So if you're interested in that, go over to reallifeglobal.com/immersion, and that's where you can find a complete description to the course.
Oh, yeah. Now let's roll on over to the quote.
So today's quote, I believe we've used this in the past, but I think it's okay to reuse it because we haven't actually had a podcast in a while. So, and this is so important to the topic of today of going beyond the classroom and learning English in the real world. So the quote is by Stephen Hart, "Formal education is a walk through the zoo. Informal learning is a walk through the savanna."
So what is the savanna?
The savanna is the wide open wilderness where the animals are not kept in cages, where the environment is not constructed and controlled. It's real life, baby.
So how is a walk through the savanna different from walking through a zoo?
Well, a zoo is a very artificial environment where the animals aren't able to roam free. They're really constrained in an artificial environment. So in this sense, I think real life English, we're not exactly throwing you to the wild, which might be kind of dangerous. You might get eaten by a tiger, but we're more like the safari guides in this sense. We're out there helping you integrate into the wilderness, teaching you how to create a campfire, how to make a tent out of the trees.
Helping you observe the lions from a distance without getting bit.
Yeah, we're out there with you, helping you survive. So again, formal education is a walk through the zoo, informal learning is a walk through the savanna, and what we're doing here is we're trying to guide you through the wilderness. So with that said, let's move on to today's topic, which is very interesting and related to this, classroom versus learning in the real world.
All right, so I think today's topic goes perfectly with the quote that we just mentioned. So what exactly do we mean by classroom learning and learning in the real world?
Well, in classroom learning, there's many ways to think about this, but in general, we're gonna think about it more like traditional classes, like learning the rules versus putting them into practice in the real world. Being taught theory versus implicitly learning that through experience. So in some sense, we believe that this is a false dichotomy. They are not mutually exclusive. Mr. V, what's mutually exclusive mean?
If you say two things are mutually exclusive, that means that they're completely separate. There's no sort of like blurred lines or anything like that.
They can't coexist, right?
Exactly. So basically, when you say it's a false dichotomy, that they're not mutually exclusive, you're saying that there are blurred lines, that there's a lot of crossover. And so you couldn't say it's like an apple and an orange. It's like two different kinds of apples, maybe, at times.
Okay. So in our sense, in this sense, really, our big mission is to help you, to guide you beyond the classroom to learn, live, and speak English in the real world. So that's what we're about. So the operative word there is beyond the classroom, because we're not saying the classroom's bad. The classroom's actually really, really important, and it has a different level of importance, a different role at different stages of your learning process. But to say like, oh, screw the classroom, burn the grammar book, that's really quite stupid, we think. So to all your teachers out there, to all you people teaching English, teaching people to build that base, to learn, you guys are doing a great service. And we're not saying that this is not important. But it also is important to take off your training wheels. So, you know, when a child riding a bike with the training wheels, the tricycle, whatever, take off the training wheels and fall down, crash, learn to survive in the real world. So there's a really great quote from Picasso that I always use to kind of summarize this is, learn the rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist, because the rules have their place. It's important to have that structure to learn to really prepare yourself so that you have the building blocks to survive in the real world of English.
Totally. So in other words, you could be saying you shouldn't throw the baby away with the bathwater, right?
To throw the baby out with the bathwater? What does that mean?
That means that you're throwing away the thing that's beneficial with the thing that is not so beneficial. So a lot of people, and I think it's especially people when they first kind of discover real world English, or they kind of discover that they can learn English independently because there are a lot of resources online, but then they're just like, no, like you said, like burn the grammar books, or, you know, traditional learning doesn't work at all. It's completely horrible. Anyone who's teaching it is, you know, a fool. And kind of basically they're throwing away all of the parts that are beneficial just because there's this other part That seems to be a much better way of learning. But I think that there's always kind of, in anything like that, that's kind of like the traditional, there's probably a reason why that has been being used for so long. And so it's kind of saying, okay, what is the thing there that's positive from my traditional classes? And then like, what are the things that I can take from real world learning and apply them so that I can have the best of both worlds?
Yes, and this depends on many factors. For example, what stage of learning you're at. Like one thing is like beginners, for example, you can't go and like watch a TV show in English and understand everything or understand 90% of what's going on. But for example, if you're a teacher and you're teaching beginners, it's really important for you to kind of spark that passion for the learners with real world English. Because a lot of times if you're stuck in the grammar book, if you're stuck in the rules, it gets so boring. It's so hard to find the motivation to really push on. But as a teacher, you can bring in those little bits and samples of real world English and give them that joy and that passion to, which will really spark their motivation and help them develop that structure they need to become more independent with their learning.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. I think that's another thing is we were talking about kind of the false dichotomy is that like I've seen that nowadays there's a lot of schools and a lot of teachers that are they're looking for kind of these new ways to bring that real world English into the classroom. So it's also like kind of recognizing people, the teachers that are trying to kind of find innovative new ways to blend that with like the more traditional ways.
Absolutely. I think another aspect of that is like what you're saying, for example, speaking. Maybe a more traditional teacher might say like, hey, wait, let's wait until you develop the grammar rules until you can speak. Whereas maybe the teacher more open to real-world methods might be saying like, oh, actually, no, start now. Make mistakes, fall on your face. Even if you can't do it, make the effort. It's still worth it. It's still important because you're going to get past that perfectionism, which will really hold you back. That's the worst thing you can have at the beginning.
Totally. I think like looking on the other side too, like the learners, like there's so many independent learners that I think really push away these traditional methods when in some ways like that, if you're trying to completely throw that away, you end up just having maybe kind of like messy English or whatever language you're learning. I definitely know I was kind of this person for like a long time that I was like, I don't need a teacher. I can learn everything for free on my own online. And, you know, that's enough. And I'm fluent in the language. Mm-hmm. And I think with many languages like this, I was fluent, but I definitely made a lot of mistakes because I hadn't really valued kind of that part of that was grammar. And actually last year, I kind of set myself a challenge that I wanted to pass the C1 exam in Catalan. And I already spoke Catalan fluently, but I'd never actually studied the grammar. So I knew like fundamentally there was like a lot of things that I had to learn and like a lot of polishing that I had to do, even though like I could understand a lot just because I've been immersed in it and speaking it all the time. And I ended up finding that experience really valuable to be learning all this stuff kind of after the fact that I already like intuitively knew a lot of these things from my immersion experience, but that then I was kind of like studying these things and it kind of made sense of what I already knew. It allowed me to kind of like break out of the plateau that I was on with my learning.
That's awesome. That's a great example. So in the beginning, for lower level learners, it's almost like the base of the pyramid of their learning is structure. And then the top of that pyramid is more like real world English. Mm-hmm. It should be. And for advanced learners, it's kind of the opposite. It's kind of like the base of that pyramid is that real world learning because you need to apply it in practice. But if you're not actually integrating that structure, because you never stop learning ultimately, if you're not constantly getting that feedback that you need, if you're not constantly paying attention to like how you need to improve, how you need to optimize, then it gets messy, like you're saying. So all the people out there saying like, oh, I learned English already. I already learned. If you're a language learner and it's not your native language, then you're going to keep needing to learn throughout your life. This is kind of the whole definition. Language learning is not something you start and end. It's a lifelong process.
Definitely. And I think for like the upper learners, like you were saying, kind of like having the space, there's so many people, so many of us that we get kind of to this upper intermediate level, I'd say, in a language. And it's a really comfortable place to be. It's like you can watch the TV series and you understand almost everything, especially if you use subtitles. And you can like listen to the music and like if you look at the lyrics, you understand. And so you're kind of able to do the things that you would do in your native language and also like in the language that you're learning. You can also do that like in English. But there's also like a sense of laziness sometimes when we get to that place because we're not really applying the deeper learning that we need to apply. Or for example, it can be a very valuable place to have a teacher because like that teacher can kind of help you to polish, can help to point out the places where you're still kind of falling over and stuff. But if you're in that really comfortable place and you're saying, oh no, I don't need a teacher, I've already learned English, I'm good, then you know you're always going to kind of just be stuck in this upper intermediate level.
Exactly. Whatever, because the thing is about when you start living your English and you know learning English in the real world, you sort of automate a lot of your habits. So you automate the way you speak, you automate your accent, you automate your listening comprehension skills, but you need somebody to come in and disrupt that and kind of de-automate those processes for you to become more conscious and for you to take those automatic ways of learning to a higher level ultimately.
Totally. Okay, so the first factor that we just talked about was kind of the level or stage of learning that you're at that is like really important for whether you should be focusing maybe in that moment more on the classroom learning or the real world English learning. And the next factor that we wanted to talk about is the situation that you're in. So a lot of people, maybe you're living in the United States or the UK, so you're actually around the language all the time, but I've met a lot of people like this that they can be like living in the United States, but they're still surrounded by people that speak their first language a lot of the time, and that can present a really big challenge. So even like being in the country, living in the country, immersed 100% of the time by the language isn't always a golden ticket. Or maybe, you know, you are living in the country that you were born in and you're learning from home and you're kind of on the other end that you're like looking for these ways, like how can I immerse myself even though, you know, I work in and live in this language. So what would you say to a learner like that, Justin?
Well, I would say looking at it more from the perspective, the practical perspective of your life, the situation you're in. So how much time do you have to dedicate to your learning? For example, if you're in your home country and you have a long drive to work, for example, this is a great opportunity to learn. You can really immerse your car experience, your learning experience, your exercise experience. Like we say in this podcast, learn English while you're walking your dog, learn English while you're exercising, while you're doing all this other stuff so that you can fill the spaces in your life with English. And ultimately, that's lifestyle immersion. Immerse your lifestyle in English to make it fun, natural, and convenient. And the more time that you can spend, listening's a really easy way to do this, you're more immersed. So that's kind of like one factor that's really important. So if you're doing all of this, then that's a really great base for real world English. At this point, it's important for you to look for strategic opportunities to speak, to get feedback, to learn, maybe get feedback on your writing, and practice the other skills of your learning English. But that goes back to that pyramid of the upper level learners who have as a base living their English. They have a base of real world English. And from there, getting that the top of that pyramid of feedback, deliberate learning, and things like that. Another really important factor, the third factor, and this integrates into the second factor, the situation you're in, is more like your motivation. So how motivated are you really to build those habits and routines? So some people who don't have motivation to really listen to podcasts every day or practice their English every day or watch an entire series in English and not understand 20% or 30% or 50% of what's going on. If they don't have that motivation, then they're going to be more dependent on learning in the classroom because they're not actually out there training. They're not training their English every day. So it's like that everyday training is going to push you along. You're going to grow and grow and grow and become less dependent on the structured approaches. So lower level learners, they need more discipline. They need more patience. They need to build the structure to understand the songs, the TV series, and maybe they don't have that motivation at the beginning because they need to develop that over time. It becomes easier when you reach a certain level. There's sort of a tipping point. So when you reach like an intermediate level in your English, when you get to the point where you're understanding for listening comprehension, you might understand like 60%. So really the difference between like 50 and 70% of listening comprehension is huge because maybe at 50%, you can't put the pieces together enough to really understand what's happening in a TV series. But when you get to 70%, it's almost like a puzzle. So if you have a puzzle, you're putting this together and many, many pieces are missing, you can't really see the picture. But if you have enough of the pieces put together, then you can sort of see what the missing pieces are, and you can learn more intuitively. And so that tipping point in your listening, you get to the point where you understand the general idea, you're more motivated because you understand what's happening, you're learning faster because you're spending more time doing it, and also the context is helping you learn as well. So I think that's really important to build the habits, the routines, build the motivation, and get to the point where that critical mass happens in your listening and other areas as well.
So Justin, you mentioned a tipping point. What is that?
Okay, sorry, I should have defined that earlier. A tipping point is like kind of a critical mass in something. So you reach a point when kind of the energy shifts in one direction. So
you can kind of think of it like literally, like if you were trying to roll like a big boulder up a hill and you like get to the very top of the hill and you're wanting to roll it over to the other side, you're kind of pushing and pushing and pushing, and then eventually it's going to get far enough towards the other side that it'll just start rolling on its own. That's a tipping point. A literal tipping point. So in this sense, we're saying like the first time that you can watch a series and you understand an entire scene, and not because like you understood every single word in that scene, but because you got enough of the vocabulary and through the context, you were able to understand like the entire argument. So that's kind of a tipping point, is when you go from the point where you're able to like watch a scene and you're just like, I'm so confused, I have no idea what's going on, to being to the point where like I understood, I know exactly what's happening, even though I didn't understand maybe every detail. And that's a really nice place to be at. If we talk about like, you can have that with many different aspects of your English learning, like for example, with reading. A lot of people will find it really intimidating to actually like read a whole book in English. But I think kind of like once you get to like a kind of intermediate level and you can kind of go for something easier, like I know the first book that I read in Spanish, I actually started reading Harry Potter, which was a book that I'd already read, which kind of lowered the barrier to entry because I already knew the story. But you kind of just set yourself that challenge and you start reading. At the beginning, it can feel like really confusing because there's so many words that you don't know. But you can also just start to kind of enjoy this, enjoy like the whole, the story behind it and everything. There's some different sort of methods that you can use to mix the enjoyment with actual learning. So at least what I like to do when I'm reading, because I don't want to have to stop every time there's a new word and look it up in the dictionary, usually is I try to get the context of like an entire paragraph, and I kind of will just underline or highlight words or parts that I didn't understand. And then like when I finish a section or I finish a chapter, then I'll go back and define everything and try to get more of the details and everything. So I think that way you don't need to see it as being such an intimidating thing, and it really is something that you should try, and kind of just having some different strategies to help to make it a little bit easier on you.
Yeah, absolutely. For example, when you're watching a TV series, I think lower level learners, they can still do that. It's going to be a lot harder work though. They're going to have to like do a lot more work to get to the point where they can really understand what's happening in the scene. Understand that critical vocabulary to really get the general idea. But if they're motivated, if you have a lower level learner who's motivated and is willing to do the work to do that, mm-hmm. to go through it, then they're going to learn much quicker. They're going to have to build the structure within that real world experience. But just out of curiosity, Ethan, what are some other tipping points in the English learning experience?
I mean, I think you have this also when you're speaking, when you're first starting to speak. That's probably for everyone, it's like the most intimidating thing in a language, is because, you know, you have an audience, you're in front of like another person, and they're going to see your mistakes, they're going to see maybe your nervousness and everything. And I think most of us tend to also kind of imagine in our mind, and we make it so much worse than it actually is. Because most people will generally, when they know you're an English learner, they know that you're trying, they'll be very empathetic and they want to help you and understand you and everything. But most of us just like imagine this really embarrassing process where we're going to have a bad experience, or people are going to laugh at us, or any other kind of negative situation. I think something that can be really useful here that I found, that even from being at a beginner level in a language, that you can start speaking right away, is if you build yourself a script. So you can actually kind of start to imagine like different situations that you'll be in and what you'll say. So, you know, if you're at an upper level, then maybe you try to kind of put yourself in even more different situations. Like, for example, having a conversation about like politics or global warming, and maybe you need to like actually get some specific vocabulary for that. If you're at a lower level, I think that you shouldn't let that be a barrier to starting to speak. You can just like write a script for your first conversation with someone. So you'd need to like figure out, is there any vocabulary that I don't know? Like, how do I talk about what I do for a living? How do I talk about my job or what I'm studying? How do I ask the other person about that and kind of understand? And then having something really useful called survival phrases. So what are survival phrases, Justin?
This is something I used to teach in my classes when I taught like presidential classes, is basically having these phrases like, how do you say, what does that mean? Sorry, can you repeat please? How do you pronounce? What's the difference between one thing and another? There are like five phrases, and I wrote an article about this, and we can link it in the show notes. It shows Ethan and I actually practicing these on video. But this is something really important because it gives you kind of the structure to at least ask for the things that you don't understand, to ask the person to repeat, to help the situation teach you, to help the other person teach you and make the situation less awkward.
Totally. So if you kind of just come with an arsenal of tools to help you to kind of shine in the situation, then, you know, it's going to really lower those barriers to entry. So all of a sudden, you'll be able to have that first conversation where you're introducing yourself, you're talking about your job, you're asking the other person questions, understanding the answers, and maybe not always understanding, but having your survival phrases to kind of help you to get through it. And you're going to feel so good after that moment. You'll just have like this whole wave of confidence because you'll just see that it is possible for you to do this with a little bit of preparation. And I think also when you're advanced, kind of continuing to challenge yourself by having conversations about things that you're not so comfortable talking about. Because like we talked about, you get to kind of like that level of comfort where you're like really comfortable at having those conversations about your job or about kind of everyday things. But then at that point, you really need to push yourself a little bit further. And a teacher can be super useful for this because they can kind of practice this with you. But having conversations about complex topics that are going to kind of break you through to the next level of the language. And I think this is where you can also tie in if you're using reading, if you're watching series, kind of watching series or reading books on topics that maybe you don't have so much vocabulary on yet, because that's really going to just open that all up to you and it will all kind of just loop into each other.
Yeah, I completely agree. But before we end, I'd just like to add one other thing, which I think ties into what you're saying, and especially even like a teacher plays the role of a coach. And sometimes not only for motivating the person, but also helping the person really develop the courage, ultimately, to not expect perfection, to go out there, because it can really feel anti-intuitive to have to go out and make mistakes. And it feels like you're embarrassing yourself. It feels like you're making a fool out of yourself speaking with people. But that's so important to be able to go through that process of just saying, screw it. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm not going to understand everything. I'm going to struggle. It's going to be difficult. I'm going to fall on my face. But this is part of the process. And it takes a lot of humility. It takes a certain level of maturity. And teacher definitely can play an important role in that.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe just on a final note there, I think when you do kind of take the challenge to put yourself in these uncomfortable situations to go beyond your comfort zone, you're really just going to grow not only in your English, but also as a person, because you're going to open yourself up to being able to take on new challenges and to be more courageous in those kind of situations.
Oh, yeah. Okay, before we end this podcast, we just have a couple of really important announcements. So we're launching this new podcast. It's been a while, but right now we're launching it at an important moment. So a couple really important things coming up this week. So the first one is the 2 million subscribers party is coming up this week. So Ethan, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's not an actual physical party. I'm sorry to inform that we don't really have the capacity yet to have a global party all over the world. But you can come celebrate with us on Learning English with TV series. We're not exactly sure which day we'll hit that milestone, but just be looking for that this week.
It'd probably be like April 15th, April 16th, right around there, it appears. Okay, the next big announcement is we have an Instagram contest coming up.
This is happening right now for the next couple days. So if you're listening to this podcast the day that it came out or soon thereafter, then we really would be great for you guys to head over to Instagram, which is at reallife.english. And we're having a contest where basically all you have to do is look for the post there for the contest and do three things. The first thing is that you need to follow us. The second thing is that you need to comment on that post, and we just want you to tell us which of our videos from Learning English with TV is your favorite ever. And the third thing that you need to do is tag three of your friends so that we can all learn together. And also be sure on that post to read the contest rules, because if you don't follow them, then you'll be disqualified from the contest. And basically, what do you get if you win this contest? So three lucky winners are going to get our Fluent with Friends complete course absolutely free. This is normally valued at $336.97. So this is a really huge opportunity for you over the next 48 weeks to take your English to the next level.
Oh, yeah. And one final announcement, something we've been working really hard on for the past few weeks. We've been searching the world over for the perfect person, for the new host for Learn English TV series, and we have found that person.
Yeah, so it's a new co-host. I'm not going anywhere on Learn English TV series, but she is going to help me because we're making more and more content for you guys, and that we want you guys just to have the best experience possible, being able to get fluent with your favorite TV series and other resources for you. So our new co-host on Learn English TV series and the podcast, her name is Andrea. She's from London, and we're actually going to have her on the next episode of the podcast, which you can look for later this week. We'll be introducing her so you can get to know her better, and we'll be talking about some of the best British TV series to learn English with.
And that will be actually at the same time as the 2 million launch. So once you hear that, once you see that, you can jump over to Learn English TV series and watch that video as well.
Aw, yeah. So thanks you guys so much for joining us today. Be sure, as I said, to head over to Instagram, which is at reallife.english. Participate in the contest. Be sure to go and leave us a 5-star review so that if we start getting those, we can get more listeners here and bring you guys even more episodes. And also head over to Learn English with TV series on YouTube and help us to celebrate this huge accomplishment.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, guys. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Oh, yeah.